Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now in the studio is George Lakoff, a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California at Berkeley. He's the author of The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-authored with Elizabeth Whaling. And his latest book is the all-new Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Lakoff.
A pleasure to be here, Ian.
It's good to see you again, George. And now we have, in Moscow, we have Vladimir Putin meeting with the Secretary of State, Tillerson. He's basically a businessman. And the only adult that seems to be running the Trump administration is General McMaster. So you have a general, you have a businessman, but you don't have a diplomat. But let's discuss these two leaders and what influences them. My understanding is that Trump, more than anything, was influenced by Roy Cohn, the famous witch hunter from the McCarthy era. And I also understand that Putin is influenced by Vyacheslav Zhukov, this sort of eminence grise character that came out of the theater and has now become his political strategist. So if that's the case, what kind of alignment is that? What kind of standoff is that?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's a standoff or if it's a way to cooperate. Right now, Putin is just getting whatever he wants from the U.S. and overriding all previous U.S. policies in Ukraine and and all over Europe and so on. So he's doing that. Tillerson, of course, is from ExxonMobil, and Tillerson negotiated with Putin for ExxonMobil to help them do oil and gas extraction as global warming warmed up the Arctic Ocean. So, they have an interest in that together. McMaster is an interesting person because in his book on the Vietnam War, he never mentioned the 3 million people who died, never mentioned Agent Orange, never mentioned the My Lai Massacre, never mentioned anything that had to do with people being hurt. It was all about just strategy independent of people being hurt. So you have people running this thing who don't have any empathy, who are not there for empathy for the Earth, for the planet at all. And for what that means, or for empathy of people in war. That goes along with Trump, who seems not to have much empathy. So, I mean, he had to have his daughter tell him, it's bad to have children dying of sarin poisoning. So,
right, and he proudly has tweeted out that he began the bombing of Syria and told the Chinese leader over a beautiful piece of chocolate cake.
Yes, right. And not only that, his bombing was pointless. I mean, it wasn't really, he said, I'm going to go get them, and so I'm going to bomb their airbase, and he barely destroyed anything there. And, a day later, day and a half later, they flew planes right out of that airbase and bombed the same city.
But in terms of what Zhukov has brought to the table in this kind of shape-shifting that goes on, where Putin funds pro and con groups, and I think Bannon has also learned something from Zhukov, where they send out mixed signals, they keep everybody off balance, that chaos may well be a part of the plan, although I think incompetence is probably a more accurate description. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, Trump is very clear. He says, I'm not going to tell people what I'm going to do, because if I do, then I lose authority. And, that's right. I mean, he says, I'm going to hold power, and I'm going to make the decisions, and no one else is going to know. And so that wherever you are, you're going to be off balance, and you're going to be waiting for me to make my decision, and that gives me more power.
So where does Roy Cohn come into that, do you think?
Well, Roy Cohn just was ruthless about this. Roy Cohn said, you win one and you destroy your opponents, as he did with McCarthy. Right. And you destroy your opponents by destroying their reputations, by destroying their incomes, by destroying them in any way you can.
So he took a leaf out of his book with Crooked Hillary, did he not, Donald Trump?
Well, the Crooked Hillary thing is more what he knows instantly about being a salesman and how to use your brain for his advantage. So he did two things there. One is preemptive framing, that is framing somebody else, and he set the frame of Hillary as crooked. And the second one is repetition. So the way this works in the brain is the following. Any idea you have as expressed in a frame is there in neural circuitry, like if someone is crooked. That's in neural circuitry. The more a neural circuit is activated, the stronger it gets. And if it gets strong enough, it becomes permanent. And as it gets stronger, it's more likely to be activated. As it's repeated, it gets stronger and stronger. The synapses get stronger. So when you repeat crooked Hillary over and over, both of those take place. And what he does is get that idea into people's brains, period. I mean, you do that, and he uses that technique and various other techniques to do this. I have been writing about this. By the way, I'm starting a citizens communication network, and anyone can, for all activists or activist groups, anyone can join. It's free. And if you just, right now we're using my Twitter feed, which is at George Lakoff, capital G, capital L, and my official Facebook page to send things out. And you can just go there and join and get whatever we have. We have lots and lots of materials there for anybody who wants framing advice on anything. Let me give you an example of framing advice. When Trump said he wants to get rid of 3/4 of the regulations, that regulations are terrible and horrible, and they get in the way, and they're costly, and so on. When he says that, what is really going on is that is from the point of view of corporations. If you shift the frame to people, regulations are there to protect people. That's why they're there. And so if he said, we're going to get rid of 3/4 of the protections of people, that would sound very different. He said, for every 2 protections there are now, if you have a new one, we're going to get rid of 2 old protections. He wouldn't get away with that, right? People would be like, United Airlines, dragging that guy down the aisle. But in fact, that is the truth once you shift the viewpoint. And so what we're trying to do is get people all over the country, whenever they're talking or talking to, if you're in Indivisible, for example, talking to anybody, people who are your representatives, you say, hey, this is really about protection. Anytime you say regulation, think protection, you're protecting me. And not only that, the protections being taken away right now would harm me and my family in the following ways. I'm your constituent, and you are supporting getting rid of all the protections for my family. And here are some of them that you're getting rid of, and you've already gotten rid of this one, which is endangering my children. I mean, you need to be able to say that and more. When they say that, companies create jobs, rich people, cut their taxes, they'll create jobs. Well, they don't, nobody gives you a job just because they're nice. They say, oh, we're going to be nice, we'll give you a job. No, they give you a job if you can create profit for them. So employees are profit creators. Once you call yourself a profit creator and you use those words, you say, hey, I deserve a fair share of the profits. I deserve to be treated with respect. I deserve to be treated well. I'm creating profit for you. You don't create jobs, without me creating profit. And you should be talking about the profit creators out there. And the same thing with pensions. What is a pension? A pension is delayed payment for work already done. They say, well, we can't afford these generous pensions. What do you mean generous? I already did the work. You're stealing my money. Right. And it's a simple shift of viewpoint. As soon as you shift the viewpoint, the truth comes out. And what I'm trying to do is have people tell the truth from the point of view of ordinary people who are affected by power, right. the power structure.
Right. Well, of course, there's a lot of libertarians in this Trump administration with the Koch brothers and the Mercers, et cetera, pulling the strings. And libertarians, of course, believe in liberty for corporations only,
yes,
not for people. And again, I'm joined in the studio by George Lakoff, a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley. He's the author of The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Whaling. And his latest book is the all-new Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. So let's talk about, there's obviously the resistance, the public, is way ahead of the Democratic Party. And you've toiled in the vineyards for a long time trying to get the Democrats smart with, I'd say, mixed results, in the sense that the Republicans have always been better at framing and semantics, etc. But what I find extraordinary now is that the one thing the Democrats have always lacked is inspiration and activism. They don't show up in midterm elections. The Republicans get every last voter out. The Democrats don't. More often than not, they're not inspired, and that happened certainly with the Clinton campaign. But now we have this phenomenon of a groundswell starting on the very day after Trump's inauguration. And on Saturday, there'll be this massive demonstration framed around the idea that show us your taxes, Donald Trump, before we pay our taxes, which is, I think, a really brilliant, simple. So I'm very gratified that if the institutions can't help us out, then maybe we should help ourselves.
Right. And by the way, on the 17th, Monday, I'm going to be on Indivisible Berkeley, live streamed to all of the Indivisible chapters. Wow. So that'll be an interesting phenomenon.
And Indivisible, of course, is started by Ezra and
Ezra Klein.
Angel. A couple of young congressional staffers who've had an amazing impact.
Well, their Indivisible guide is brilliant. I mean, and what the only thing they lack is, you know, some better framing, though it's pretty good in there. Mm-hmm. They do a good job on the whole. Now, the Democratic Party is about trying to lose as much as it can. Today, it put out a list of talking points, which are all of the form, I am not a crook. You know, like, I wrote a book called Don't Think of an Elephant, which may, if you negate something. And by the way, anytime you negate an idea, you have to activate the idea in the other guy's brain in order to negate it. As you activate the idea, you make it stronger. Mm. So the Democratic Party put a list of things that Trump had done or said, and then said, it's false because of this, it's false because of that, you know, and went all the way down saying, like, I am not a crook, I am not a crook, I am not a crook. You know, they haven't learned the most basic lesson of the book, Don't Think of an Elephant.
Right.
And that's lesson number one. The Leadership Institute in Virginia that trains conservatives, that's the first thing they say. Never use the other guy's terminology even to negate them.
Right.
And they don't even know that. Mm. But the reason they don't know it is a very interesting reason. See, if you're a conservative and you go to college, there's a very good chance you're going to study business and business economics. And in that curriculum, you'll study marketing. And marketing professors study my field, cognitive science. They study how people really think. That's very important. They study that people think in terms of frames, metaphors, narratives, emotions, images, and so on. Now, that means that conservatives who do that have as second nature a way to sell their ideas, to market them. But when progressives go to college, they don't take those courses. And they don't take cognitive science or neuroscience or cognitive linguistics. What they do is they take political science, law, public policy, economic theory, and so on. Now, in those courses, I hate to say this about all the universities, because I've taught for 50 years in universities, they use a false theory of language and of thought. They use a theory of reason from Descartes in 1650. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, all thought is conscious. Thought is 98% unconscious. Mm-hmm. Consciousness is the tip of the iceberg. Conscious thought is structured by unconscious thought. Then the assumption is thought works by logic. He was a mathematician, Descartes, and he said, when I think consciously, it's sort of like I'm doing a proof. Well, no, it doesn't really work like that. It's largely unconscious, and it works by frames, metaphors, images, emotions, and so on. Very, very different. That is normal thought. And so Democrats don't understand this. And then Democrats assume that people, ideas fit the world directly rather than going through the neural systems of their brains. And they don't. They go through your values and your neural systems. They don't understand that words have different values. A word like freedom means something totally different to a conservative than to a progressive. Mm-hmm. I have a book called Whose Freedom that goes through that in very great detail. And the point is that people don't understand that words don't just mean what they say. Words depend upon the worldview that you have, and people have opposite worldviews. And this is something the Democrats don't seem to get.
Well, now, has this problem with the Democrats being out in the wilderness and way behind the Republicans, and again, they've, you know, when I look at Tom Perez, I think, my God, what are they doing, you know? And they didn't even give any money to this guy that did a very good job in this election that just took place yesterday in Kansas, where he came close in a solidly Republican district. So, and it was, again, it was activists like the Daily Kos that gave this candidate money. Do you think that the problems that you're talking about, have they been exacerbated by social media? Because, again, Bannon and company captured social media. Hillary Clinton didn't even know about it, I don't think. She was doing advertising, talking about the deplorables and all this stuff, and spending all this money saying the same thing over and over again right up to the last day. Meanwhile, Bannon, through Cambridge Analytica, a company that he and the Mercers own, they did data mining on social media. They buffaloed Facebook into getting rid of its human curation of the news, which enabled them to flood fake news into the mix. They targeted, micro-targeted different communities. My sense is that we are entering an era now where people get their, what, three-quarters of people get their news from Facebook, largely from their friends.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know what's real anymore. I mean, how can you have a society in which there's no consensus on what is true?
It's a very, very difficult issue. And Facebook really ought to be having a set of major investigative reporters checking their news feed. They, you know, the idea that the news, their news just goes out randomly is not a good idea in terms of what people like. You know, it's a like, so it goes out. No, it shouldn't. That shouldn't happen. So, I mean, Facebook is irresponsible in terms of not doing something like that. And I think it wouldn't cost them that much given their money. The media stuff is interesting. What Trump managed to do was use the media. Even if the media was against him, he's still using it.
$5 billion worth of free media.
Free media. MSNBC, you know, is supposedly anti-Trump, and every day, every story is about Trump. They don't understand that going against Trump helps Trump. You know, I am not a crook, you know. Don't think of an elephant. Don't think of Trump. You know, you'll think of Trump. That's what they're doing every single day. I was called by the show On the Media, a very good show by Brooke Gladstone, and she asked me, what do you do to cover Trump? And I gave her the following answer, that anytime Trump says something, he's most likely trying to get control of the story with something that's not true and to divert it from some real issue. So what you need to do is keep on top of the real issues and start always the coverage with the truths about the real issue. That is, frame with truth first. Secondly, if he's trying to use some diversionary issue, frame with the truth about the diversionary issue first and point out that this is a diversion. Say, he's trying to divert your attention from this real issue with this other one. Here's the facts about this real issue. Then you say what Trump says in his tweet or whatever. And then you say, as you can see, this is false. You know, he's trying to divert you with false information. The real issue is this. Let's get back to the real issues.
But how do you deal with, I mean, progressives tend to talk to themselves. And the other side, the conservatives would rather be effective. They don't care about intellectual inconsistencies. Liberals and progressives tend to want to be righteous rather than effective. And we're dealing with a phenomenon where 85 to 90% of Republicans absolutely love Donald Trump. They are thrilled with him. He's right. Doing a great job.
Right.
They're thrilled with this guy. He's just put on the Supreme Court. How do you reach those people? Bernie Sanders is the only person who's even thinking about reaching these people who Hillary Clinton demonized. I mean, there's obviously this cognitive dissonance between the fact that Trump's populist message How can it possibly play with billionaires hanging out at Mar-a-Lago and rubbing shoulders with the Koch brothers and the world that he belongs to? And all this talk about draining the swamp, when look at the people he's put on the cabinet. The evidence is overwhelming, but how do you break that cocoon of denial about who this guy is? Not with the progressives who already have figured this out, but with the people who need to figure it out.
You also need to do it with progressives who aren't sure of themselves, who are partly conservative. The issue has to do with, again, a neural phenomenon, something about the brain. I'm finishing up a book on the neural mind right now with the co-author. And the basic idea is this. Most people are not all one or all the other, not all progressive or all conservative. They, what is a moderate? A moderate progressive is someone who has partly conservative views on different issues, so one issue or another. A moderate conservative has some progressive views, again, on different issues, but there's no such thing as a single set of values for a conservative, for a moderate. There is no ideology of the moderate. They're just variations on the other. And then the question is, well, how does it work? How can someone be a moderate? Well, you can be a moderate because in order to be, if you have, let's suppose you're a conservative and partly progressive, on the part where you're progressive, you have to have a progressive worldview, a moral worldview that's progressive, applied only to certain issues but not others. So you have to have one worldview applied to many issues, the other worldview applied to certain issues. Now, those worldviews are opposites of each other. How can you have opposite worldviews in the same brain? Any neuroscientist will give you the answer. Each worldview is characterized by a neural circuit, and all through the brain there are circuits called mutual inhibition. The activation of one turns off the other. And as one gets stronger, the other gets weaker. So that if you can strengthen their progressive worldview, then you weaken their conservative worldview. If conservatives, as they have over the past 20 years, can strengthen conservative worldview in people who are mostly progressive but partly conservative, the more they strengthen that, the more conservative the progressives get. So the idea is, how do you use language? You use language always to talk about in terms of your worldview. And you don't use it to negate the other guys. You never do that. You have to have positive language for your worldview. Now, there's another phenomenon you need to know about conservatives, arch-conservatives. People who are very, very conservative tend to have what's called in-group nurturance. That is, they care about their in-group. If they're in a church, they care about other church members who might happen to be poor but are good churchgoers and have good families and so on. And if they're losing their homes, they might even build them a house. They care about people in their military units. They care about the people they go bowling with or in their neighborhoods. And if there's a flood, you'll see these conservatives out there swinging the sandbags. If it's a fire, they'll be on the fire hoses. Namely, they care about the people in their in-group, whatever that is. It could be their community, their friends, their neighbors, their church group, whatever. Now, when you talk to somebody who is very conservative, what you want to do is evoke that sense of in-group, because that is where progressive thought lives in them. They already have that progressive thought. And you're not going to activate it by talking policy. You're not going to activate it by using the usual progressive policy language. What you need to do is talk at the level of people, at the level of their families, their homes, what really matters to them, whether they're going to be, their food is going to be safe to eat, their water is going to be safe to drink, is there going to be stuff in the water? Let me give you an example. How would you feel if you needed drugs, if you had, diabetes or cancer or something, and you were prescribed a drug and it didn't work? And what would happen if 9 out of 10 drugs didn't work? Well, that is, in fact, what is likely to start happening now, given something that came out of the Trump administration, which said that you don't have to have drugs tested by the Food and Drug Administration, that the companies can do their own tests. Well, the Food and Drug Administration, I've talked to the former head of this, says, look, every drug is supposed to be safe and effective. Well, when you test for effectiveness, 9 out of 10 drugs fail. Most people don't know that in our tests. Mm-hmm. So we throw out 9 out of 10 drugs. If you don't throw them out, then right. they're out there. So yeah. if you are sick, chances are 10 to 1, sure. your drug's not going to work. How do you feel about that? How yeah. do you feel about that idea? Wouldn't you like those drugs to work? Wouldn't you like the Food and Drug Administration to insist that drugs be effective? You know, does that matter to you? Right. You know, think about that for a minute. And, you know, and then the question is, how would you deal with it? Do you have a Republican that you're voting for?
Right. Well, George, we've run out of time, and we need that message, and we need to win, and we're grateful for you. And I've been speaking with George Lakoff, Professor of Cognitive Science and Linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley. He's the author of The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-authored with Elizabeth Whaling. And his latest book is The All-New Don't Think of an Elephant, Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. Thank you so much, George.
Always a pleasure. Yeah.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.